Well, are American churches actually sending missionaries who are prepared not just to go and pay the price of reaching the nations with the gospel, but to stay until the task is done? That is a topic of vital importance to today's guests here on the Missions Show today. Stay tuned. Greetings and welcome to the Missions Show, where we explore your hard questions on missions, theology, and practice to help both goers think and thinkers go. I'm Alex Kochman, Director of Communications and Engagement for ABWE, the Association of Baptists for World Evangelism. And I'm joined this time, not in studio. He's back home on the other side of the continent. Of course, I'm talking about my beloved, cuddly co-host, the one and only Pastor Scott W. Dunford. Scott, we're here together with our two old friends, guests on today's show, whom you'll introduce in just a moment, for another spelunking expedition down the shafts of missiology. And we're glad that you've joined us. If you're on YouTube, remember to hit the bell and subscribe to ABWE's channel for more content like this. If you're an audio podcast listener, remember to follow the show and leave a positive rating and review so that other people can discover it. Also, don't forget that we are now on Patreon as well. And so if you want to get access to our bonus content that we'll record right after this main show, you can look up the Missions Show on Patreon. Scott, how are you doing today?
I'm very good, although I take a little exception to you calling me cuddly. Like, you and I have never cuddled, Alex, and I don't anticipate we will.
We have not. However, I'm just, you know, going back to our fitness episode, I'm just trying to keep you humble, man. Like, trying to keep you on your goals. And, you know, speaking of the rigors of missionary preparedness, maybe that's a good way to introduce our guests today.
Well, two guests that probably need no introduction to our listeners. Brooks Buser, been on our show many times, president of Radius International, former missionary to Papua New Guinea with his wife, Nina. 13 years church planting in Papua New Guinea, and then coming back to the States and starting Radius International. We'll talk about that in a little bit. And then Pat Daly, if you've been to any conferences at all in our world in the last decade, you've probably seen Pat, maybe in his role, former role at Banner of Truth, and now serving with Greenville Presbyterian Theological Seminary, where he oversees non-academic staff and helps execute the president's vision as a vice president there. Pat and Brooks, welcome. And we're excited about, this isn't a new thing, this is several iterations now, but the Missionary Conference, which is already becoming one of those things that if you're going to schedule something on your calendar years in advance, you want to put the Missionary Conference on your calendar. And so the question for you guys, and we'll start Brooks and then Pat, you can feel free to chime in on that. Why a National Missions Conference? You know, we have all these other conferences going on around the country. Why a missions conference nationally, and why is that so important right now?
Yeah, thanks, Scott. Glad to be back on your guys' show again. I think the centrality of fourth lane missions, if you don't know what that is, go to ninemarks.org or missionary.com and you can read about missions to unreached language groups. A lot of people talk about missions. Missions is in every conference. Everybody thinks they work with the unreached until you drill down into the linguistic component. Once you drill down and go, unreached language groups is more what we're talking about when we get to Matthew 28, 19, and 20, when we get to Ezekiel 47, 12, when we get to Revelation 22, 2, when Paul's talking about where no foundation has been left, or where no foundation has been laid, excuse me. We're talking about those things. And I think that resonates with churches because missions has become anything and everything today. As long as you're giving the gospel to a non-family member outside of your house, it counts as missions. And that's so watered down the missiological bar that nobody knows what that means. And so I think the missionary conference is trying to recapture a la what happened in 1972. And then as we saw different missionaries from John G. Payton to Henry Martin to Adoniram Judson go out to these places when William Carey would write a document that would seize the world and go, this is what we're lacking. I think that clarion call back to that, that's what we're missing in missions today, because everybody talks about missions. Everybody's going to the unreached until you start to drill down and get to the definition of it. Then we're talking about different things. It's like talking to a Mormon. We use the same terms, but we mean vastly different things, especially in missions today. So that's why Missionary Conference, the National Conference, stands out. That's why you have so many well-reputed speakers and people that want to be involved in it. I think we have Pat, correct me on this, like 20 some exhibitors, and we had like 170 applications. This is Missionary Conference number 2, and it's doubled in size from, it's likely going to be doubled in size from the last time, because people are itching to figure out what is this that we're not doing. That's my general take on it. Pat, any thoughts on that?
No, I thought it was excellent, and that's really the heart of it. I would just, the only thing I would add is that within the Reformed Church, we have this rich history of missions, particularly to unreached language groups, but in recent history, it's kind of fallen by the wayside. So there is a movement and an excitement within the Reformed Church, whether that's within, you know, Baptist or Presbyterian traditions, to remember our history, to remember where we've gone, and then to reevaluate what we're doing today and ask, are we following Christ's commands and the Great Commission as faithfully as we should be? So I think from a, like a speaker perspective and other ministries that want to partner, there's a lot of Reformed Christians that are excited. They know this is important and they want to learn more.
Well, that's helpful. And I'll even just broaden that slightly. Not only Reformed, but Protestants in general have this rich missions heritage, and some of that skipped a generation. Scott grew up hearing these great missionary biographies and being raised on that. Those were his heroes growing up in the church. My upbringing, that wasn't emphasized as much. And so I think there's a generation that's recovering historically the rigor of what it's meant to be a missionary. So Brooks, I'll throw it to you again, though. You shared with us that the theme this year is the Lord who sends. So unpack that and specifically answer, what are you hoping that attendees walk away with, you know, other than, of course, stopping by the ABWE booth, seeing me, seeing Scott? That's great stuff, too. Obviously, shaking your hand, shaking Pat's hand. But what are you really hoping that they come away with?
I'm hoping, so the theme of the conference is meant to emphasize it's the church who sends. There are agencies that facilitate that sending, but the church is the primary mover, shaker. It's through the church that the Great Commission will be accomplished. And so as the Lord sends through the church, and so you're going to see themes on the church throughout, we're going to have a different, like you've got Ian Hamilton, who's going to do Thomas Chalmers and the St. Andrews Seven, so the six missionaries that went based off of Chalmers' ministry, and that emphasis of how did these young men become catalyzed to go to India and to change the entire landscape of India? Well, it started with a good church, and it started with a pastor who took involvement in their lives and pressed into them fairly hard. And so that idea that this isn't just, and this is maybe again what separates this conference, it's not just getting people excited about missions. That's really easy to do. You can get 18 to 25 year olds pretty revved up fast. Oh, yeah. It's what about those who stand behind them and rightfully should take the lead in these things, getting those guys into prominence. And so I think that's where we're going to press a lot of our energy. And I think as you see, there's going to be a lot of pastors there. That's another one of the attributes of this conference. A lot of pastors thinking through, how do we do this better? We either have given this authority over to others where we shouldn't have, or we've bought into a type of missions that is really undistinguishable from evangelism.
What about you, Pat, your unique vantage point serving in a seminary context? Obviously, any seminary program is going to want a piece of that to include development of future missionaries. But what specifically makes you passionate about this conference, and what are you hoping that attendees walk away with?
Yeah, I think Brooks was kind of touching on it there at the end. It's not just exciting missionaries, although or future missionaries, although we hope that we will do that. It's not just equipping current missionaries, although we hope we would do that also. It's kind of zooming out and looking at the whole picture. How does the Lord work through His Word? How has He worked historically? How does He use the church? Individuals, sending agencies, what's the proper biblical relationship? How do they thrive? How do they fail? Getting into some of the nitty gritty, we've kind of wanted to go deeper in evaluating biblical relationships in the whole missionary enterprise. So I think if someone could come to the conference and walk away with more than just inspiration, but kind of a roadmap, kind of a plan of, okay, how this is how we at our church can evaluate our missions committee, our missions giving, our missions philosophy, and be more biblical. That would be it. That would be an incredible walk away.
So it's a unique combination here. You know, Brooks, your organization really focuses on going deep with missionaries who are on that that track of reaching the unreached language groups in the world. you work at Greenville Theological Seminary, Presbyterian Theological Seminary. We've had Jonathan Master on a number of times. And I love his vision for equipping pastors theologically, but also equipping men and for the mission field, right? So what is unique about this combination of training, uniquely training missionaries, uniquely training pastors, that allows you guys to be able to come together in this really unique partnership for missionary.com, but also the Missionary Conference, to really seek to make a unique impact? What do you think about that combination really works?
Greenville was the first seminary that understood we've got to have these men know their Bible really well, and then we've got to give them practical training. And so we formed a partnership, I think it was 7 years ago, and the fruit of that is sitting in down in Mexico right now, where you've got men who have gone through Greenville and now are going to the mission field. They were the first seminary to capture that. Last week, we were at an event at Greenville called the Missions Midweeker, where it focuses exclusively on how do we reach unreached language groups. You've got Baptist pastors there. You've got Presbyterian pastors there. That appetite for how do we take men who know their Bible, but now they got to get the practical training, merging those together has naturally brought together our organizations. And we've seen, by God's grace, great fruit come out of that. Pat can talk about the Peyton Society, Presbyterians trying to recapture what was John G. Peyton, what was Henry Martin, what was so many others that went to these unreached groups in previous generations. And so I think that emphasis from Jonathan, from Pat, from Brett Rutter, from these, and Michael Morales, if you ever go to the Missions Midweeker, I'll just say this, Michael gives the first talk on the Tower of Babel and how that stream connects all the way back to Revelation 5:9, Revelation 7:9, why language, this dominating indicator throughout Scripture, is so prevalent throughout Scripture, and how we measure the nations today and the advancement of the Great Commission. That type of an emphasis has seen our two organizations yoked together to see some great fruit by God's grace come out of it.
It's a hard question to answer because, you know, you want to just put your hands up and say, it's all the Lord's work. Like, he just brought all these things together, and providence is best read backwards. I don't think we had any big vision of this 7 years ago. It just kind of slowly happened, one piece at a time. You know, from a seminary's vantage point, we want to train men really well, rigorously in the original languages, church history, systematics, biblical theology, keep going. In Radius context, they want to train people for the hardest things, the brass tacks of how to do missions biblically in an unreached language, closed country context. And so we both had our different strengths, but really a one heart, and the relationship and partnership with like this, you know, Greenville Radius MDiv, to starting a conference together to inspire people within our circles that we knew that were all excited about it, but didn't know where to go, to the launch of Missionary, which is, you know, it's under Radius. It's independent from us, of course. It's just really the Lord's working. People who want to see men well-trained, well-prepared for the specific task of missions in an unreached language context has led to everything that we have today. And it's really been God's kindness to see it come together. It's much more than I think any of us initially imagined.
I'm excited about this because when I was young, and Brooks, you could probably relate to this, it was like, there's such a need. There's so much lostness. Don't waste too much time with your training. Get to the mission field as fast as possible. And I'm so thankful that there's becoming this recalibration of saying, because the task is so huge, because the task is so important, take the time to get theologically trained well before you go to the mission field so that what we're doing on the field really can stand the test of time. So I'm thankful for this partnership and partnerships like it that seek to put brass tacks, like you said, Pat, with deep theological understanding and a passion for God's glory, which really is what the fuel of missions is. So,
of course, and another organization that's passionate about all of these same things, of course, is ABWE. So we'll hear from them for just a moment. We'll be right back. Hey, listeners, we know you believe in missions. Otherwise, you probably wouldn't be listening to or watching this show. But have you ever wondered what your next step with the Great Commission should be? Well, wherever you are with missions, if you're ready to get serious and find what your next step is, ABWE's 24-hour demo event is for you. Now, you can go to demo.abwe.org. Again, that's demo.abwe.org, and use the promo code podcast for a discount on your registration fee. So it takes all excuses away What are you waiting for? Come find your next step with the Great Commission at demo.abwe.org, promo code podcast. We've talked about this on the show before, but just to reset this for our audience, the distinction between unreached people groups, which is kind of the generally accepted missiological term, and unreached language groups, which is a helpful distinction within that. You know, what is a people? What is a nation? That's a little bit fuzzier than who are the language groups or what are the languages in which scripture hasn't been translated yet. And I love the clarity of that. In fact, for that reason, you know, you said everybody thinks they're reaching unreached people groups. I like to use the term least reached sometimes just because there's a difference between those that literally have no gospel access in their language versus those who may or may not have access to it, may or may not have linguistic resources, but they're just largely unevangelized, right? So I think we need to use precise terminology. But it's interesting when you look at mainstream missiology, you find there is always this desire to find the next thing, right? And I've even seen some literature, okay, like, you know, Gen Z or Gen Alpha, that's the next mission field, or digital nomads, you know, that's the next mission field. You're really kind of calling the missions community back to the categories that matter most, not just chasing the latest trends in sociology, but that basic access question, that question of, can you hear the gospel in your language or not? Can you read the Bible? And can you worship in your own language or not? So just reset for us briefly why that matters so much.
I mean, if you look back at most of the Reformed theologians, they will say that the culmination of the fall, obviously it begins in Genesis chapter 3, but it culminates in Genesis chapter 11, when man is going against man. Man breaks out from God in Genesis chapter 3, but he breaks out from each other in Genesis chapter 11. And the recapturing of that, that's where in Acts 2, men are proclaiming the glories of God in their own languages. That language that Luke uses is meant to hearken back to Genesis chapter 11. Language is this dominating indicator. And what's happened in unreached people groups is the only limit to it is creativity. There's the Gospel Coalition put out an article, I think it was about a year ago, where it listed the province of Quebec as the most needy, unreached people group in all of the Americas. So that's geographic. Then you've got a lot of agencies that will list the Dalits or the Dalits, depending on how you pronounce it, the lowest caste in India as the most needy people group, unreached people group in the world. And then you've got these major indexes like Joshua Project that will list unreached North American hockey players as a very needy unreached people group. So is it occupation? Is it geography? Or is it caste or race? And the problem with unreached people groups is it's all of the above. Everybody defines it differently. And so each organization just goes after whatever they want, so to speak. And that becomes the downfall, the thousand cuts that are killing unreached people groups. Nobody knows what it means. It means anything and everything. Where unreached languages, that's objective. We can tell who speaks that language. Our Lord has instituted when he chose to separate men, he separated them by the tongue. And it's the recapturing of the gospel in each man's tongue, not just the scriptures, but the teaching and proclaiming. This is where Romans 10, 13 to 15, how shall they hear unless someone preaches to them? We live in the age of the ear. Someday it will be made sight. We'll live in the age of the eye. But right now, it's through the ear that the gospel is proclaimed. And so that recalibrating, going back to what others standing on their shoulders and going, language is your dominant indicator. Yeah, other indicators are there. That doesn't mean that it's not, it's just language, but that's your dominating one because everything else is Katie bar the door. Anything from left-handed carpenters in Ireland becomes an unreached people group. And so we go after them because they're a segment that's less than 2% reached. And that's the downfall of it. That's the differences.
I think that's helpful. And it also shows that there is this temptation to hyper-contextualize everything, right? Not only are you missing out on who the real target of the Great Commission is, you also, I think, start to trick yourself in that process into thinking that there's a different approach, a different ministry strategy that we have to have for every single group, left-handed carpenters in Ireland and so forth, when in reality, there's one gospel and it's a matter of translating and appropriately communicating that gospel across those cultural divides. So that's helpful, Brooks. And Pat, I want to ask you, you know, we talked about, yeah, it's easy to hype up 18 to 25 year olds. for missions. It's easy to hype them up for anything, right? Maybe less so with the current generation. Maybe there's some cynicism there. But that's kind of the age group that you're working with, a little bit older than that as well in a seminary context, not just undergrad. But you are thinking about young men and young women as well to an extent, but particularly men that are wired towards pastoring, church planting, and so forth. What would you say is so important to help those young men that are being developed escape just having this emotional zeal for missions and actually go beyond that into solid, serious preparation?
I don't know if you can hype up a Presbyterian. I think it's easier in this context to achieve that. So I think Brooks is speaking specifically about Baptist events, but in our context, no, I'm just goofing around. But no, I think ultimately you have to teach them the Bible. Get into the Bible. How are people going to have a deep biblical conviction rather than just emotional response? Well, they need to know what Christ teaches us, little church history, understanding this is not brand new. That's the ultimate answer to your question, that the Lord would work through his word. People come of conviction of what God's doing and how they can serve him and be obedient to the Great Commission. I mean, that's the only answer, really. But I think in our context, what we're seeing is as the need, like the need to go to unreached languages, the hardest work left undone, people who have never heard of Christ, have never had the word in their tongue, have never had a missionary ever in 2026, putting that need in front of our people in my context at Greenville Seminary, I think it's really animated and motivated. It's excited, but it's also really challenged the young men. And young men, if like we know, there's this, I don't think it's really popular anymore. I think most people have figured it out. But there was a movement where dumb it down, make it simple, make it accessible. And young people will come, you know, sing really simple hymns and really simple choruses. But that is so irrelevant now. What's much more common, not that we would do this because it would work, but what's happening in the zeitgeist is the hardest challenge, the going deeper. Young men are drawn to that. They want their lives to count for something. They want to follow God. And they're willing to go on the front line. It's the young guys who are willing to do it. It's usually the middle-aged guys who are maybe, you know, they got their American dream going on. They got the 401k stacking. It's hard to motivate them. But young guys are ready to leave it all. And that's good. That's not a bad thing. It can be harnessed incorrectly. But I think in our context, if we, you know, try and teach them the Bible, give them a framework for how the church works, and they're excited. So it's drawn many to our seminary who are interested in missions. Not everyone's going to go to unreached language groups. We're not saying that they should. But when we have this tip of the spear to kind of catalyze and motivate men, we're finding more and more students drawn to us who are interested in missions in general. We've got a student mission society that started all on our, you know, students have led it. They start it. They're praying for unreached language groups and different people groups each week. It's just drawing more and more guys, even guys who came to seminary, hey, I want to be a pastor in Alabama. They're hanging around these guys who are like, hey, I want to go to the bush. I want to go to the hardest place. I want to go where it's going to take me, you know, 4 years here. I want to go to, or 3 years here. I want to go to Radius. I want to go, then I have to go into the language context where I can learn the language. And then it's going to be, you know, it's going to be a 10, 20 year enterprise. They're sitting beside them and saying, you know what? My wife and I have been talking about it. We've been praying about it. We want to do that too. So it's contagious. And that's a good thing. And so we're excited about just how the partnership has borne fruit in that way.
Brooks, what would you say, because for churches, what are they risking when they send people that have a huge zeal for the nations, but they don't have adequate training? What's at risk there?
I think at risk is syncretism. That's the big thing that a lot of people don't understand. If you go too fast and you don't know your Bible and you don't know what you're teaching into, which is code for you don't know the culture and the language of the people, you're going to give some Jesus words and some gospel message, and they're just going to overlay that on top of what they already believe. And that's going to result in a new religion. It's not Christianity, and it's not what they originally believed. It's the mixing of the two. This is where you look at South America and you have much of the Day of the Dead. That's not Roman Catholicism. That's the mixture of animism and Roman Catholicism. And Christians have been responsible for a tremendous amount of syncretism, well-meaning Christians who love Jesus but didn't know their Bible and didn't know how to go against what they were preaching. They didn't know how to displace that original worldview. And so they press too fast and they end up creating new religions all over the world. if they're not well-trained, meaning they don't know their Bible or they don't have the practical skills. This is the downfall of so many. And this is where, again, I'll come back. I'm a Baptist. I have a huge soft spot for Greenville Presbyterian. The statistics will show that the further a young man goes in his theological education, the less likely he is to go into missions, except if you have direct paths to get from the seminary to the mission field. That's where so many Baptist institutions fall down, is they want to train them in the Bible, but they have no outlet for them to get to the field. So they're naturally captivated by the English-speaking world and they stay home. How do we create outlets to get to the field? They got to know their Bible, but they got to know, I got to have these other skill sets. I got to know how to break down a language and culture. What are the 13 major areas of culture? How do I raise normal MKs? That's the biggest fear of most missionary ladies heading overseas. My kid's going to be weird. He's going to come back and be shooting squirrels in the park rather than hanging out in class or being part of.
That sounds awesome.
Well, it's awesome until you have to marry a girl and nobody wants to talk to you. But anyway, there's just all these skill sets that missionaries need to know. They got to know their Bible, but they have to know these other things as well.
I don't know. I think all of our kids are a little bit weird. I think we're all a little bit weird. I think most of the world looks at us and thinks that we're weird. But let's all be weird together in October at Missionary. Brooks, tell us how we can find out more about Missionary in general, because there's the films, all sorts of resources, articles, other events, but then specifically the national conference coming up. Where can people go?
Missionary.com is a subsidiary of Radius. Radius is the training arm. Missionary is creating resources. It's got a lot of podcasts. It's got a lot of different speakers, articles, and then six films that went back through the pioneer, different ones like William Tyndale, William Carey, Amy Carmichael, John G. Payton, different luminaries and the lessons that we learned from them. So if you go to missionary.com and you just look at events, or there'll be the banner for the 2026 conference coming up October 14th to 16th in Fort Worth, Texas. That's at the Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary's campus. We're going to be anticipating somewhere between 3,200 to 4,000, depending on how many Texas churches decide at the last minute to show up. So this is going to be the second iteration of the Missionary Conference. We're really looking forward to it. You've got Michael Reeves, John Piper, Kevin DeYoung, Mark Dever, Ian Hamilton, Rosaria Butterfield, H.B. Charles, Mike Riccardi. You've just got a killer lineup of people that are interested in how do we continue what the mission that God gave to the church, how does that play out in 2026? How do we see churches raised up to accomplish that task?
Well, over the years, I've become a little bit less of a conference guy. I don't like to leave my wife and kids if I have to. This is one that I'll be at. This is one that Scott will be at as well. Of course, ABWE will be there, and we'd love to connect with anyone that's there. Brooks and Pat, thank you both for being here. Stick around for our bonus episode, which again, we're about to record exclusively for our premium subscribers. You can get access on Patreon or go to our website for more information, missionsshow.com. And we'll talk a little bit more about what's happening at Radius, as well as at Greenville Seminary. And we want to hear more from these guys. So thank you for sticking around, guys. And for all of you, thank you for joining us. If you have suggestions for future topics that we should explore or guests we should bring on, email alex@missionsshow.com. And remember to stick around for that bonus episode. And we'll see you in the next episode. But until then, go and make disciples of all the nations.